By the end of the first session, I wasn't tired anymore.
Interesting.
I was calm and I was clear. Mm-hmm. My body didn't hurt. And I'm like, what happened? Like, what just happened?
Like, yeah.
How is this possible?
Bonjour, friends. Welcome to Whole Body Optimism, the podcast that's all about embracing a modern approach to positivity, clean living, and personal growth. I'm Dr. Chrissy, and I'll be your guide on this journey toward a happier, healthier, and more optimistic you.
Yeah, really easy.
All right, everybody. Today, we are so excited to have this amazing guest here, Dr. Robin Tiger. She is actually a board-certified radiologist that really did some extra education and became a board-certified lifestyle medicine physician. And she is a certified life coach, a certified yoga therapist, and a certified meditation instructor. So I am so excited to hear all about those things during our conversation today. So thank you so much, Robin, for being here. And I would love to start with if you would just introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing now, as you know, is different from what you finished whenever you were done with residency.
Yeah. Well, Chrissy, thank you so much for inviting me. It's really, really an honor to be here and to share. And we have a really similar passion for
looking
at the human, the whole human. So I really feel aligned with your passion because that's my passion as well.
Nice.
Yeah. And well, I'm here. As I like to say, you make your mess your message.
I like that.
And I consider myself a burnout thriver.
Oh, nice.
You know, I like to think of myself as that. And about 15 years or so ago, when people weren't talking about what was going on with us as physicians and as healthcare professionals in general, I didn't know what was happening. I had lots of symptoms popping up, and I saw lots of doctors, all my friends, all our colleagues.
Right.
I had strange things happening in my body, my mind, things as scary as paresthesias in my hands, where I'd be doing a breast biopsy. I mean, you're a surgeon, all of a sudden you can't feel what's going on. Pretty terrifying. Wow. I had, you know, digestive issues and pain in my body and tinnitus and vertigo and bleeding gums. Like, what is that? You know, all kinds of things, migraines. I mean, I was falling apart and I sought lots of medical attention. So I went to gastroenterologists and neurologists and periodontists and nutrition. I mean, I saw everybody, PT, OT, chiropractors, massage therapy. I was trying to figure it out. Right?
Yeah. It seems like you just feel like maybe, you know, what is wrong with me? Like, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners can relate. You just feel like, am I just too much of a burden to everybody? Like by listing all these things that are going on with my body. So I get that.
Yeah. You start to feel crazy.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm taking all these pills, a pill for an ill. Is what we say. So every doc gave me a pill. Take this, you'll feel better. Take this, you'll feel better. Well, I didn't feel better. I had a pile of them I took every day. Of course, I'm a radiologist. So I hopped on every imaging you can imagine and everything was negative. I had every lab test that anyone could think of. Everything was negative. And I started to have some bad thoughts. You know, first they were just kind of like stressful thoughts. And then I had dark thoughts like, I can't take another day like this.
Right.
Like, I don't know if I want to be here dealing with
scary.
This anymore. It was super scary. And Chrissy, I have to share with you that I had lost 3 physician colleagues and friends to suicide. Wow. So I was really scared. And again, nobody was talking about this stuff and I didn't really put it together and no one else could put it together. And I saw a fork in the road. I had 2 little amazing kids at the time, a great husband on the outside. Mm-hmm. Everything looked incredible, but I was just a mess. And I said, okay, traditional Western medicine isn't figuring this out for me. The smartest people that I know can't figure this out. And I don't want to head down that road that my friends have already head down. So it's on me.
Yeah. You got to do something different. Yeah.
I got to figure it out. Like, and what is it? I was already exercising a lot, running a bunch of races, eating what I thought was a really healthy diet.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much vegan. Like, what else? What do I need?
And I'm sure, you know, like type A women like us, you know, we always think like, what can we do to figure it out? We won't stop until we figure out there's got to be a solution. There's got to be a solution. So I totally get that. And I know a lot of people probably can resonate with that too, is like, okay, no one else is figuring this out. Like, I'm going to just pick up my bootstraps and I'm going to figure it out myself.
Yeah. I was scared. I was really scared and I felt terrible every day. As you say, the whole person, my body, my mind, my spirit, my self, whatever it is that you want to call it,
right?
Totally out of whack. I like forgot who I was. And I said I was already a gym rat, essentially. You know, I'm doing all that. I think I'm eating well. I'm like, well, what else out there is there? And I kept hearing more and more about things like yoga, things like meditation. And I thought they were totally ridiculous.
Like, yeah,
what are those people down the hall at the gym that close the door and wear weird clothes and twist their bodies into positions I think as a radiologist cannot be possible, right? Upside down and backwards and listen to weird music and say weird things.
Totally, totally.
I saw those people walking down the hall year after year, you know,
like, yeah, well,
not for me. But it kept coming back to this advertisement in our local papers, things that kept showing up, that the studio down the road from my home was offering this like 101 class. And it was taught by an anthropology professor at our local university.
Oh, interesting.
And so my left brain was like, okay, like, I kind of felt like she was probably credible. She wasn't like Molly Moonbeam, somebody weird, right? Like pixie dust everywhere.
Right, right.
And I just kept coming back to it. And I said, you know, what, like, how could it be bad? If I don't like it, I just won't go anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to go alone.
Yeah, right.
So I asked my next door neighbor. I said, hey, she's a nurse. Hey, you want to go do this thing with me? And she eye rolled and I eye rolled.
No. Like,
and she said, all right, come on. I said, look, I'll buy you dinner. If it's terrible, sure, we'll leave and we'll get some dinner and it'll be
fine. Sure. What's the worst that can happen?
We'll get some food.
Right.
So I have to tell you that it was a long work day. Okay, I remember that day so clearly. Early day, work all day. I can't tell you how many cases I did, how many cases I read, how many biopsies I did. I came home, I fed the kids, I bathed the kids, I hand them off to my husband. I showed up like with one eye partially open at about 7:30 at night to the studio, questioning the whole time I'm driving there, why am I doing this? I am exhausted. It's going to be stupid. It's going to be a waste of my time. And I walked in with my tail between my legs with my neighbor and it was life-changing.
Really?
By the end of the first session, I wasn't tired anymore.
Interesting.
I was calm and I was clear.
Mm.
And my body didn't hurt.
Wow.
And I'm like, what happened? Like, what just happened?
How
is this possible?
You're like, there must have been pixie ducks here.
Yeah, who's putting the pixie dust? Because I didn't take any pills and I didn't have any therapy. And what was that?
Right.
And so that was my left brain kicking in and diving into figuring out what happened. And diving into the medical literature, staying up late, we didn't have a lot of internet at the time. I was like, had a lot of books still. So I'm just paging through books and I'm looking into the things I could find in terms of the research. And what I came to understand was that I balanced my nervous system, that my autonomic nervous system was out of whack. And what I learned how to do was to create that homeostasis between sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. And that was the beginning of my understanding of what was wrong with me, which didn't need any pills, which didn't need any therapy, which didn't need traditional Western medicine at the time, but I just needed to learn how to feel better all by myself, starting with my nervous system, which was completely dysregulated.
Totally. So I know a lot of physicians and healthcare workers are listening and they kind of know a little bit about parasympathetics and sympathetics. Would you mind reviewing for them sort of what is the difference between the two and how do we get trapped in one or the other overriding?
Yeah, so for basic anatomy that we learned a long time ago, our nervous system is really like this tree, right? And so it's at the top, we have a nervous system and it's broken down into our central and our peripheral nervous system. And our central nervous system is our brain and our spinal cord. And our peripheral nervous system is everything else. And that's broken down further into somatic and autonomic. Somatic is voluntary. Like if you decide, if I say lift your arm, you lift your arm, that's a voluntary movement. And then autonomic, which I remember from med school, I thought of it as automatic because it's the automatic things that are happening. So you're not telling your body to breathe. You're not telling your heart to beat. All these things that are just happening fall in your autonomic or automatic nervous system.
Sure.
And then that's broken down further into sympathetic and parasympathetic. Now, traditionally, we learn that sympathetic is the stress response and parasympathetic is the relaxation response. And we can break that down just into those simplistic terms. I like to think of stress response as putting your foot on the gas pedal of your car and your relaxation response as putting your foot on the brake pedal of your car. And you want both of those pedals to work. You want them to be friends. You want your car to work well, right? We don't just want one or the other. We want them both working all the time. And we want them talking to each other all day long, which is creating that balance or that homeostasis.
Totally.
The problem is when our stress response is on overdrive. Now, we need it. We need it in an emergency situation. You're a trauma surgeon, right? You need that to kick in when someone comes in that ER, when you're in that OR. We need the stress response to be on point when it's supposed to be. The problem lies when it's on all the time. When we have chronic stress, which means that our stress response is always on, our brain always thinks there's an emergency. So all the things that happen when there is an emergency continues to happen. Our stress hormones are constantly being pumped out, particularly our chronic one, cortisol, which is like the big bad wolf when it hangs around. It does lots of really terrible things. And the cascade of events involves not only your physical body, your blood pressure, your heart rate, right? Your immune system tanks, your digestive system turns off. All these things that happen when your stress response should be on are continuing to happen. So you get sick more. You can't digest your food right. Your bowel habits are completely off. You're not sleeping well, right? And your blood pressure's up all the time, which then leads to other things like heart disease and stroke, including you craving junky food, all that sugar, all the fats, because you need emergency energy. So your, you know, plaque is forming and, you know, and so on.
Right. So just to review what you're saying for the listeners, we talk about stress a lot and how you need to reduce your stress. Like, I feel like there's a lot of toxic positivity in that, and that we're just kind of telling people, oh, like go do a meditation, go do a yoga so you're not as stressed. But really, I think if we realize as individuals that stress actually impacts your whole body, not just like you need to check a box in order to stress reduce so that you feel quote unquote better, but rather it really stress and chronic stress in particular with that foot on the gas, I like your analogy of that, is really going to make you crash into a wall. And it's going to make the whole car dysfunction. And you'll start feeling things from your brain fog to sleeping poorly. And then it's just like a vicious cycle. And so I really think people should look at stress more as a disease and not just, oh, you're stressed out, like it's a choice. Because I feel like as healthcare workers in particular, and you may experience this as well, even in the work environment, you have to be stronger to not be stressed out. You have to look like you're not stressed out because you got to put that face on and you can't talk about it. You can't admit that this is a really stressful environment because then that is a sign of weakness. When I think that if we address it head on and we look at this, and it's not necessarily something that's wrong with ourselves, but there's a dysfunction with our routines and our daily basis, what we're eating and things like that, that are contributing to this cortisol being high. There's practical and simple things that we can actually do to bring that cortisol down, to not have those systemic effects on our body that you'll see in the chronic illness. And I'm sure you particularly see a lot of patients that are in this cycle. Where do you start with those patients? Like, how do you just even start the conversation to say, take them out of that cycle?
Yeah. So for me, it's been a journey. I started initially realizing the impact that stress was having on my body and the symptoms that I described to you, down to the paresthesias, down to the negative thoughts, all disappeared. As I continued to learn how to regulate my nervous system and how I added meditation in to work with my thoughts and how I added life coaching in to continue to work with my thoughts and so on. And so that was the initial piece, was okay, this disease, as you say, this chronic illness, one of the things that really helped me to focus on this was also my understanding of it shaving years off your life.
Yeah.
And, you know, as physicians, we're told to just shut up, keep going. As you mentioned, you know, like, don't complain.
Right.
You know, you feel guilty about complaining, but the truth is that you're much more effective and you're much better at everything when you are calmer and then you are in a more clear place.
Right.
We're like, okay, so what if you have tinnitus? So what if your body hurts? So what if you can't sleep? So what if your digestion's off? I'm just going to deal with it. The problem lies not in the symptoms, but in the illness that all of that's creating.
Mm.
And the illnesses that I mentioned, the chronic illnesses, the most common: hypertension, diabetes, stroke, heart disease, cancer progression and growth. And then the big one, which was the scariest one for me, was when I learned that it prematurely shorts our telomeres.
Mm.
Our telomeres are the protective ends of our chromosomes,
yes,
which determine our longevity. And so chronic stress shortens them more quickly.
Wow.
So that we don't live as long.
Yeah.
So that was like, are you kidding me? Chronic stress blocks telomerase. That's the enzyme that puts the nucleotides that builds the telomeres on the ends of our chromosomes, and they prematurely shorten more quickly.
And right.
So you have actual years shaved off your life. And as healthcare professionals in general, as physicians, whoever you are, healthcare professional or not, you didn't come this far to only come this far. Right. And so when I learned that, wow, I'm actually shortening my own life that I'm working so hard to get here to.
Right.
Like, all right, that's got to stop. And so to go back to your question, like, how do I help people? Well, it started first with the stress piece.
Sure.
And then I started learning more and more about other facets: exercise, nutrition, sleep, social connection, risky substances and escapes. And I started focusing all these things before I even learned about lifestyle medicine.
Wow.
I heard about this branch of medicine, a newer branch, a new specialty of medicine, several years later in my career. And they actually focus on these six key pillars, which are stress relief or stress management, exercise, nutrition, social connection, risky substances, and understanding that we have a disease management system. That's what we're doing right now.
Right.
You come in with a thing, your disease, your symptom is managed. You get a pill, you get a procedure, you get a recommendation for therapy. But what if we could prevent, reverse, and sometimes treat those things with behavior changes? And that's essentially what I did with my stress relief.
I mean, that's pretty profound.
Pretty profound. So your back hurts. Well, why? You know, your sugar's up. Well, why? Your blood pressure's up. Well, why? We actually know from the literature, you can reverse adult onset diabetes completely and you can prevent it. So there are things that we can do with these behavior changes. So as I continued on my journey, I learned about the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. And I learned that there is this field of medicine that works from everything that I'm about all in one place. And so how do I work with people? Well, I work with people through all of these pillars of behavior change, understanding how to create effective behavior change and understanding what those changes need to be to elevate your health and well-being, to reverse the symptoms, the illnesses, and the ultimate diseases at times that have occurred from these behaviors that we were never taught.
Right. Yeah. You know, those are, I mean, it's fascinating to hear you talk about this. And, you know, I've read a little bit about the lifestyle medicine track to get there. Can you tell the listeners, you know, do you have to be a physician in a certain specialty in order to apply for this training? Or like, what kind of ways can you become certified in lifestyle medicine?
Yeah, so it is an actual board. It's an actual medical specialty. And you just have to be boarded in another medical specialty.
Got it.
That is considered, you know, the National Board of Medical Examiners has to see your specialty as one of theirs, proving your certification and your licensure in that. And then you can go on to become boarded. I was brought on initially for the stress pillar. I was introduced to their education department through another physician who's a lifestyle medicine physician who said they really need to know about what you're doing. And they really were amazing and welcoming with open arms and invited me on as faculty. And they said, we'd love for you to be our faculty in stress management, to be our key opinion leader here, to build out this section in our board review manual, because this is the portion, this is the pillar that we seem to be lacking in the most. And I spent over 2 years creating that new module.
That's impressive.
Yeah, thank you. It was really a labor of love to create both the text content for the manual as well as the video content. And while I was there, they said, you have everything. We'd love for you to become one of us and to become boarded. And I just actually, as our minds do, I said, wow, I haven't taken a board exam in about 30 years. I want to tell everyone out there, it's never too late.
And right.
I was so hungry for this knowledge. I ate it up. I loved it so much. And I, you know, I took the boards and passed the boards and I'm honored to be a board certified in what I believe to be, you know, probably one of the most important areas of medicine that we have now. And that is preventing, right, reversing, and sometimes treating illnesses and diseases through behavior change. So that's really how I got involved. And so anyone out there, all you need is to have your board certification. I also want to say, in something else, I also want to say that there's a second test for non-physicians. So anyone who's in healthcare who has other areas of healthcare that they have as their specialty, whether you are a nurse, whether you're a PA, whether you are a registered dietitian. If you are a healthcare professional that's a non-physician, you have this different test. Our test is longer and has more clinical stuff on it.
Sure.
But you can still become board certified in this field. There are only, I think, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 physicians that are certified now. So in this country, if we have 1 million docs, Chrissy, that means there are 997,000 doctors that don't know about this. So I'm really excited about it and excited to help. My clients are predominantly other physicians, teaching physicians how to care for themselves so they can care for their patients.
And that's so impactful and so important these days. Now, question about, a lot of people talk about that are interested in practicing lifestyle medicine. They wonder, well, is this covered by insurance or is this just like a private payer? Do I have to bill all my clients? How does that work?
Yeah, there are different models. And there are different ways to get paid. And there actually are whole articles written on how they do that, whether it's individual, whether it's the group visit, whether physicians are just incorporating it to their existing practice, whether they have it as an add-on or a totally separate track. And there are many ways that physicians are utilizing it in their clinical practice. I'm utilizing it coaching other physicians, being the physician's physician predominantly, and then other healthcare professionals that have come to me for help as well, and some organizations that are outside healthcare. But so for me, it's outside the clinical realm in terms of the insurance. But insurance does cover patients individually in group visits, depending on the model that you're using. And there is literature available for that. It's still growing. It's the codes right. are still being created.
Totally. I truly appreciate that you have that as an option for especially physicians out there who not only need like a mindset coach, but it seems like what you can offer them is more of a holistic approach with your lifestyle medicine training as well.
Yeah, I really found that it can be really hard to work with the 60,000 thoughts you have per day, most of them not so nice. When your body is dysregulated, when you don't know the food you should be eating, when you're not exercising properly, when you're not connecting with others, when you're escaping. So thought work is amazing, but it isn't going to work at its best when the other factors are not aligned. And that's why I see the whole person and all of these pieces as being so important in moving you forward in your life
yeah.
in the way that you want.
That's amazing. Now, I am really passionate about clean eating and giving your body the most clean things that it can be experiencing, mind, body, and soul. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the clean eating practices, maybe like your go-to when someone's just first starting off on clean eating in their journey? What are some of the things that you tell them from the get-go or things that are positive for your body, clean for your body?
Yeah. So first off, anyone who's listening that wants to run away because I think I'm going to say you have to be vegan. I'm not going to say that. Okay. So you can keep listening.
Amen.
Of course. Okay. So I like to, when I work with my first responders and my SWAT teams and firefighters and police officers and veterans, and I've learned from them to focus on 1% better every day. Okay. Mm. So we as physicians think we have to do things 150% or we don't do it at all. Okay. Cause I know what you're thinking right now if you're listening. And so just giving yourself that space to be 1% better every day in any of the areas that we talked about is really going to allow your shoulders to soften a bit and to allow you to be effective at whatever you want to do. That said, we can all improve, even me, always 1% better every day. Right. How can I be different today than I was yesterday? So with respect to nutrition, what I've learned initially, there are, in terms of eating plants, eating more plants, how can you put more plants on your plate? I love the saying by Michael Pollan, eat food, not too much, mostly plants is how it goes.
Nice.
So we want to put more plants on our plate. And that's because we've learned from the literature that plants are incredibly healthy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the other stuff that we're eating is not. And what we understand is that the standard American diet, or the SAD, S-A-D standard, is very sad.
Yeah, it's really sad.
And it's causing so much illness and so much disease. And it's causing the most common illnesses and diseases that we have. So we want to turn all of that around. And we want to do that by eating, as you say, clean. I like to use the word healthful. How can we eat in a more healthful way? So looking at the most healthful plate would be, half of your plate would be fruits and veggies, a quarter of your plate would be your protein, and a quarter of your plate would be your grains. And we want to eat as whole as possible. So we want to eat whole food, meaning not processed, as much as possible. What does that mean? You've got the apple. That's as whole as it is. And then maybe you squish it and it becomes applesauce. It's a little bit processed. You squish it some more, it becomes apple juice. Next thing you know, you've got like an apple gummy bear. Okay. So that's like processed. So we want to eat food in its wholest form as much as possible. That is the healthiest way to eat our food. We want to eat as much as possible natural sugars, not added sugar. Right. So sugar, people think too much fruit is bad. No, it's not bad. Natural sugars are okay. It's the added sugar. So you want to look out for added sugar when you're looking at your food labels. We want to eat healthy fats that are not saturated. We want to eat healthy fats are good for us.
Yes.
Okay, we need fats. Our brain is myelinated, right? Our nerves are myelinated. We need the healthy fats in our body, like the avocado. Right. I have a little cartoon where the one avocado is running away from the other avocado and the one avocado is saying, I said you're a healthy fat. <You know? laughs> And so it's not that you're fat. It's a healthy fat, right?
Yeah.
So want to focus on the healthy fats. In our grains, we want to focus on whole grains, right? We want to focus on things that are not bleached. If you're going to eat rice, not the bleached rice. We want the outer coating, that fiber coating of the rice, for example. Mm-hmm. We want to eat things that are in its wholest form. So focusing on those components really, really are important. And how can you do more of that in your everyday life? Now, for me, you know, you initially asked, well, how did I get into this? How did I, you know, even start to think about this? It's kind of a gross story, but as doctors, we like disgusting.
We love gross.
No, we love gross. So I'm going to tell you a gross story from Gross Anatomy.
I love it.
Our very first semester in Gross Anatomy with our cadavers, we were dissecting the abdomen. And we were told to dissect open the aorta. And I dissected open the aorta and I felt something sharp on my glove. And I pulled my hand out and I looked at my glove and it was sliced open. And it was sliced open and I went, what happened? I pulled my glove off and my skin is cut just a little bit. Like blood wasn't really coming out, but it was like I could see the scratch. And what I came to understand was that the plaque inside my cadaver's aorta cut my glove open. And I didn't even know from plaque and aorta and what the heck was that. And so I had a huge aha moment and I said, oh my gosh, what is this? And I came to learn that this is from the food that we put in our bodies and all the stress that we have in our life.
Right.
And this is actually something that we cause ourselves.
God.
And I didn't want that to happen to me.
Right.
And so that was the beginning of my journey of figuring out that, wow, food matters. Yeah.
There's got to be something else. It's so interesting. And I'm sure a lot of, especially physicians that have dissected their own cadavers can relate to that story. So you see these things that I can remember our cadaver so well. And you almost like use that as your starting point to say like, oh, this is what the inside of someone looks like. And how does disease actually manifest? And you have that indication of that whenever you get to do it yourself, you get to dissect these cadavers in front of you. So yeah, like that is an experience of a lifetime. And I'm sure a lot of people kind of walked away from dissecting their cadavers with maybe some similar sentiments that they may be invested in wanting to cure one of the diseases they found on their cadaver. So a huge gratitude to those people for that too, for letting us to do that and learn more about our knowledge about medicine.
So true. I think we learned so much from those cadavers. And for me, it was initially about what am I doing that could be causing this in my body? And then diving into the literature back then, several decades ago, is when the literature started coming out about reversing that.
Yes.
Dr. Dean Ornish was the pioneer in reversing heart disease. And we actually can see, you know, angiograms with plaque in coronary arteries, and then angiograms later on with plaque less, and then later on plaque even less. And so by making these behavior changes, including stress relief, including the nutrition, including our sleep and our connection and all of these things, we actually can reverse what's going on. But that was my first aha about food.
That's incredible.
And that's the physical body, right? So that's like the physical body, but what I really came to understand in studying lifestyle medicine was that food creates mood. And that research shows, that research is showing that foods that are high in added sugar, that foods that are high in saturated fats, that foods that have all these chemicals actually cause an increase in anxiety, stress, and depression.
Wow.
So And when you're feeling anxious and stressed, these are the foods that you're reaching for.
Totally.
So it's this vicious cycle. When you're feeling stressed, Who here reaches for a piece of celery?
Right.
No one ever. Right. No.
I mean, and so what do they stock in the cupboards at the hospitals?
Doritos. Doritos and processed
M&Ms. Peanut butter. I'm sure everyone listening here, if you've ever trained in a hospital, you've seen those graham crackers and peanut butter that are stocked at almost every station out there. They don't stock them with celery.
They don't. And the thing is, what I've learned is that you can still eat your favorite foods. Just need to find healthier versions of them, and they still taste amazing. Right. I think all food should taste amazing. You shouldn't have to eat things that you don't like, but you can eat healthier versions of the things you love, whether you're already buying them that way or whether you're learning to make them that way.
Right.
And it's not hard and it doesn't cost anymore.
And it's really, to me, I always say it's like an investment in your health. Like if you're putting it on the front end, you're not going to have to deal with these big aortic surgeries and all that kind of other stuff to reverse it later down the road whenever it's harder to do. Talking about the workplace environment, what do you think are some strategies of healthcare professionals in administration or listening in? What advice would you say chime in their ear to, like, how can we change this peanut butter and graham cracker problem in the break rooms?
Just swapping for healthier versions. I love peanut butter. You know, I love peanut butter. I want everyone here to go home, if you're not home now, and pull out your peanut butter and look at the food label.
Yeah.
I want to see what's going on in there. You don't need things like palm oil. That's frequently in there. Really, really dangerous for you. Okay. You don't need lots of added sugar. You don't need that. You don't need lots of salt. So you can find peanut butter that is really healthy, that doesn't have oil, that doesn't have added sugar, doesn't have all these chemicals that you can't pronounce. If you can't pronounce, you shouldn't be eating it.
Yes, amen.
And if you can't spell it, no. Right. And you can have a little bit of salt. In terms of the salt, what's recommended in general is you look at the calorie content for a serving, and your salt should not be a number greater than your calorie content. That's just a quick and easy way to look at the salt content.
Nice.
So for example, my daughter found this, Trader Joe's has a natural peanut butter that has a little bit of salt in it. I have the one without salt, I have the one with salt, depending on what, if I'm cooking or what I'm making. There's no added oil. There's no added anything that's really unhealthy. So I work with doctors all the time. I know you love peanut butter. I love peanut butter, but you can find a healthier version. Same thing with your crackers, right? Same thing with so many of the foods that you love. It's just being more aware, making sure you get a lot of fiber. Fiber is so important. I didn't know anything about the microbiome and how fiber feeds our microbiome and how we need that so much to keep us healthy for our immune system and our sugar regulation and our mind and most of the serotonin is made in our gut. And so, you know, making sure you're getting enough of that as well.
Right.
So I think in terms of the hospital systems, it's just taking time to swap out healthier versions of the things that you have. I think it's taking time to look at your menus and seeing how you can make them more healthful.
Yes.
And adding a plant-based option. And there are lots of hospitals that have plant-based options now on their menus, not only for the cafeteria, but for their patients.
Wow.
It's incredible. You can look at New York, Manhattan. They are the prototype. Mayor Eric Abrams just turned around his own health with his eating, and he has implemented more healthful meals in schools, more healthful meals in hospitals, and so on.
So maybe even the leadership themselves taking this step and cleaning up their lifestyle and cleaning up their eating habits will maybe give them more motivation to want to have this for the providers in the hospital and the patients as well. I like that.
Yeah, it really is. It's a whole team approach, right? But yeah, it does come from the top down. And the thing is, you feel so much better when you eat better.
Right.
I mean, we know how we feel when we eat like junky stuff. You don't feel good, but you can't, it's not that you can't ever have it. Of course you can still have it sometimes, but can you eat better? 1% better.
Every day? I like that. 1% better every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I thank you so much, Dr. Tiger, for being here today, interviewing to give so much helpful information to our listeners. I want to stress to everyone, stress that you can find her at stressfreemd.net and you can book an appointment with her. You can get involved and try to figure out if a coach is something that you don't have and you think that Dr. Tiger is full of knowledge like I do, she does, you know, book a call with her and figure out if you guys can work together. I really think that people like you, Dr. Tiger, are going to change the way we practice medicine and the way we feel on an everyday basis when we treat our patients. So I appreciate you so much. And I thank you so much for being here today.
I thank you so much for having me. Thank you for all that you do as well. It's been an honor.
Thank you so much for joining us on this uplifting journey through whole body optimism. We really hope you found today's episode as enlightening and inspiring as we did. Remember, optimism isn't just a state of mind, it's a way of life, and you have the power to shape your own destiny. Be sure to follow us on this podcast and on Instagram and Facebook to learn more about some practical and simple tips to find whole body optimism.